Dream job or nightmare? It's hard to know if a career that looks great on paper will actually lead you to the life you want to live. So welcome to Dream Job Cafe. I'm Larry Port. I'll be asking different professionals the questions you won't find anywhere else. So grab a coffee, settle in. This is Dream Job Cafe. Hi, everyone. I'm Larry Port. This is the Dream Job Cafe podcast. And with me today is a friend of mine from the legal tech industry, David Schnurman. He is the CEO of Lawline, and he has a whole list of stuff that he's involved with. He has a book called The Fast Forward Mindset. He's coming out with another one about his year experience in Barcelona, at least 1 year, right?
It ended up being 2 years.
Okay. We'll touch on that one, which is, it's an awesome story. He has a podcast that he's running. He's a speaker. He's been involved in organizations here and there. So, but David, thank you so much for being with me today.
Larry, it's awesome. Congrats. I love the name of the podcast and I'm looking forward to the diving deep.
So, well, let's start right now. So you are, you started Lawline, right? This is your company. You're an entrepreneur.
So there's two stories to Lawline.
Okay.
Story number one takes place in, well, story zero takes place in 1986. My dad started a public access TV show named Lawline.
Oh, wow. I didn't know that.
Yeah. And he did that for years on cable access and then a short period on PBS. 1999, he was doing a lot of lectures for bar associations in New York State. CLE just became mandatory in New York State. And he had an idea with his law partner. What if we took CLE online? And they actually, Lawline, and then Lawline became the first CLE company to offer CLE in New York State and worked with the regulation authority to make that happen. Those first few years, however, were brutal because it was too early. It was dial up. They weren't really business people. They were lawyers. So in 2001, they dissolved the company and essentially for 5 years did nothing. And when I was in law school, I had started my own public access TV show called True NYC, interviewing entrepreneurs.
I didn't know this either.
Yeah. And then, and that's where that's honestly is that TV show. And then this is before there was a podcast, which has led to every opportunity that I've had today. And that's why I restarted a podcast this past year. And while I was doing that, I said, well, what if I interviewed attorneys instead of entrepreneurs? And I was able to turn those into courses. What if I could take the name Lawline that's been around since 1999 and say that we've been accredited since 1999? And then in 2006, we relaunched Lawline and rebuilt the accreditation. And so that was phase two. So it was me and a high school intern, my third year of law school, with, you know, essentially zero in revenue to build it up.
So, yeah, and historically that would make sense time-wise because like your dad was too early. 1999, I remember I was in grad school. We were experimenting with, I was in computer science, like media and video online. It was like very, very challenging. There was no streaming. In 2006, isn't that around, is that YouTube-ish time? Is like streaming starting to become a thing? So, and CLE is, by the way, continuing legal ed, which is like what lawyers have to do to maintain their accreditation, right?
Yep. So 1999 was when you thought it was the right timing because it was when broadcast.com was sold to Yahoo for $1 billion.
Yeah, there was Gazoon.
That's Mark Cuban. Yeah, so that's how he made all his money. And then he sold it before Yahoo tanked, but it was still dial-up. So it wasn't ready. And at the end of the day, they were running a law practice. So they weren't running a business.
Gotcha.
So it was a lot of different things, but it was the idea. It was forward thinking. And that's what led to where we are today. So, and he kept with, even though he dissolved the company, he kept the URL and he kept a couple of courses on it. So it was building off that foundation. That was super cool and super helpful, obviously.
Now you're in, so you went to law school, but let's back up a little bit even before that, like in high school or college, did you have a sense of what you wanted to do?
I always dreamed of being an entrepreneur, but never really knew how to get my act together to do it. Like I was that guy who was like in middle school who was going, I swear to God, I would go into Staples, I'd buy, get one of those shopping carts and it would take like calculators and mini safes and all these different things. And I'd put it in my shopping cart, never to buy, but just be like someday when I own a business, these are the tools that I would need. This is before Amazon. Yeah. So that's what I did. I used to read Entrepreneur magazine, look at all the businesses on the back. But I couldn't figure out how to do it or what to do. And so my first 6 years out of college, I was in sales. So I was selling online advertising through 24/7 media, which became DoubleClick and a couple other companies. So that was my, before then I became a real estate broker. And it was studying for the real estate exam where I said, you know what? I kind of enjoyed that studying. And my fear was that if I didn't move out of sales, 20 years later, I'd be in my 15th sales job, just kind of doing the same thing. So I wanted to build a career for the next 20 years. Ironically, my 20 years is pretty much since I graduated at least law school. I graduated law school in 2006. So I'm pretty much at almost that 20 year lifespan. So we'll see what happens next, but at least I hit that mark.
You must have been good at sales. You were doing it for 6 years, right? Can you talk about your sales experience?
I was good to a point. First of all, sales is the best experience that anyone can get going to any part of life because you're dealing with rejection, you're dealing with creativity, you're dealing with having to get on the phone every single moment of the day and just call and call and call. So there's consistency, there's organization. We had, you know, Dale Carnegie sales trainers come in that made us smile in the mirror, and we had to stand up when we speak, and we had to do all these different things. And so that was really hard. And so when I say I was good to a point, like one of my biggest sales was was to Orbitz. Do you remember Orbitz? It was a travel agency website.
Yeah, Orbitz. I remember that.
And I got, you know, it was one call, $50,000 one-time sale. And then I got a $250,000 sale. And I was the kind of guy, when I would get a few good sales in, I would kind of get a little lazy and ride off that commission for a while. So I was good, but I didn't hustle to the next level.
Well, just so people who are, and I want to just take a second to explore this for a second, because the movie Wolf of Wall Street is really popular with like Gen Z and a lot of people that are like watching the show. And just so people know, it's not sell me this pen. You don't have to have the like kind of aggressiveness or that like inspired way of talking that Leonardo DiCaprio has in this movie. I mean, a lot of it's like process and calling and doing kind of the right things over and over. You have to be resourceful, like you say, but like, can you speak a little bit to that?
Yeah. I think one of the underrated and most important part in sales is finding how you're creative to find the right potential clients or the prospects. Because back then, it wasn't like when you sell online advertising, it's not like in Wall Street where they give you a list of names and you're just smiling and bowing. You know, I had to find businesses that I thought would be the right type of business that could sell, that would want to advertise their product. You know, and Orbitz being a travel agency, I said, look, we have the largest network online of all the, we have like thousands of sites where your banner ad will go. Everybody wants to travel. This is the perfect type of thing. I sold to lens.com, you know, for eye lenses. So finding those people, then finding the names of the people there, then sending them a creative email that speaks to them, and then getting them on the phone and then asking a lot of good questions is which I love to do. So all that was what it was. The game is so different now with AI, and you know, the amount, I'm sure you see it in your inbox, the amount of spam that is generated from AI emails coming to me daily, where people pretend like they know who, because I would always, when I would email them, I would make sure to say something specific about Larry. So it was clear that I didn't just spam you. Mm-hmm. But now I get these emails about my podcast, about this, and they're just too good that I know it's really AI.
So right.
All of that is kind of discounted in a way. So I always found the shorter the email and the more personal and the more shorter, the better.
So, and I want to move on because I have one last question about those years, because I think it's going to be interesting to people.
I wasn't happy, to be honest. If you're asking about career satisfaction, I wasn't happy. I kept switching jobs. So it wasn't.
You weren't happy in sales. But what about your, like, so I guess, why weren't you happy? And then outside of that, like, were you able to have a life outside of your job, or were you just like working like 90 hour weeks, or what was it like?
I happened to graduate in an amazing time because it was 1999, the height of the dot-com boom. Ooh. So not only did I have a lot of time to have fun, it was part of the industry. So we were in a public company, got really well-funded, and every night there was another industry party in New York City. So I almost felt like it was college, second, the next stage of college. So yeah, so I was not paid so well, right? So it wasn't like I was making a six-figure job. My first job, I was making $27,000, and I wasn't even in sales. I was an account coordinator. So I had to move up from being an account coordinator to sales, and I was doubling my salaries and getting commissions. So it was that. The reason I was happy at every role based on the relationships and what I was doing, I just think, you know, I didn't it wasn't fulfilling enough for me to just sell banner ads. So I knew that's not where I wanted to be long term, and I needed to do something a little bit more bigger and intellectually stimulating. And somehow I luckily weaved my way into this path to do it.
You know, it's kind of funny. That echoes my experience when I was working in software. I loved the intellectual stimulation of it, but I felt that I wasn't realizing all the dimensions of my skill set. Like the creativity really wasn't being like pushed. The people stuff wasn't being pushed. So I had a similar kind of tugging into this entrepreneurial adventure. So how would you describe law school to people that are thinking about law school? Did you like it?
So it's interesting because when I was in law school, it was, like I said, I think 5 years after college. So most people in my class went straight from college to law school.
Oh, I didn't know that.
So I felt like I was just at a different stage in a good way because they were, many of my friends at that time were still in that college mindset, like, you know, just school, and that mentality. And for me, I made the choice to go back to school, which I thought at the time was to have a legal career. And so, yeah, but I enjoyed it. I got value. I thought there was a lot of interesting things there. There's a lot about school in general I don't think is done right, especially in this day and age when just sitting in a lecture and taking notes and then getting outlines from other people from the same lecture last year is exactly the same. Like, I think there's a lot of repetitive, unnecessary, boring content that can be improved. And I think there's a lot of opportunity to improve law school to make it more experiential and to prepare attorneys for what's happening with AI and how law is transforming versus focusing on case law and the Socratic method and not really giving the apprenticeship experience that schools like in the UK and other in Canada do for students. And the cost is just mind-boggling for most people.
Yeah. We interviewed Jared Correa recently and he had similar sentiments. Okay. So tell me about what it's like to be an entrepreneur, because it's not for everybody, right?
To me, it's the best thing in the world in every level, because to me, the best feeling of an entrepreneur, it feels like a school project. It's the creativity of figuring out your own ideas, working with your team. And when you realize this and you've been in this game long enough, some people just can't seem to do no wrong. But most people, even if they're growing, they still don't really know what they're doing. They're still trying to figure it out as they grow. As you know, when you had your own business, you're always trying to figure out like, okay, how do we get to the next level? How do we get to the next level? And you're kind of making it up as you go. And that's what you realize entrepreneurship is about, like making mistakes. I like saying, and this is where I got from a book, you call it mistakes. Like in a movie, when you film a scene, they usually film the same scene 100 times or 10 times. It's a miss and then movie take. And so like, when you start realizing like obstacles is the way, you know, you have to go through that, and it's all about leadership and mindset, sort of getting through the challenges of entrepreneurship. And then of course, once you build the right team and you have momentum and you see the business going, it gets even more fun. But yeah, certainly I will say, in fairness, my memory purposely is bad. So I'm probably forgetting a lot of the painful first 5 to 10 years and there's painful times now too, but there is a lot of pain. And I don't know if I'm sure I would do it again, but knowing now what I went through 3 COOs in 6 years and had to fire each one. And each time I thought the company was going to go under because they were running the day to day and I wasn't. That's just one example. Having my top sales leader, having 3 people working under him, they were all stealing from the company. And they were all our top sales people. I had to fire them all in one day. And then there was drugs in the company. Like, there's just, I can tell you story after story that you wouldn't think you would experience at a small business that sells online CLE. So yes, there's definitely a lot of pain and suffering that goes through it, but I couldn't imagine any other way for me.
To me, that was the beauty of it. Like, I felt that there is no way to grow a company without growing yourself. I found that during that period, I had become such a better version of myself just because of all the things you have to be able to do to grow a company.
One of my coaches says he's never seen a company grow faster than the leaders of the company can grow.
Oh, that's interesting.
But the thing is, like, we go through phases, and like right now we're at a phase of like, okay, you know, we're an 8-figure business, we're growing, but there's lots of opportunities ahead of us that there's no clear path on which is the best move today. And so we feel a little stuck, you know, figuring that out. And just like we had the 0 to 1 million stock, the 0 to 5 million stock, you know, the 10 million stock, and then the stock where we're at today, there's different levels and phases that we continue to go through that sometimes it feels like you're not going to break through that wall, which is what my first book, The Fast Forward Mindset's about. And so it feels like you're not going to get through it. You're not going to get to the next level until you do. And then you look back, you're like, that was easy. And so, you know, look, I know you can relate. I know many people can relate to that on here as well.
Well, okay. So let's think about it. If you're like a college student, or if you're like a recent graduate and you're like thinking about like entrepreneurship and stuff, my point to you is like, and I think David would echo this, is like, listen, you might as well try. I don't have faith in long-term work with corporate America or, you know, businesses that have institutional investing behind them. There is no loyalty to you, right? So I can tell you plenty of people that I know personally that have like worked for Microsoft or large companies that have just been laid off because the company and what they view their position as are no longer in alignment, right? So you don't have control of your destiny when you work for a large company. When you are an entrepreneur, I feel like you are way more in control of your destiny. So in some ways, and correct me if I'm wrong here, I almost find it like less risky. Like that's how I viewed it. Did you view it the same way?
Well, that's what Gary Vaynerchuk says, right? Like
Gary V.
I used to listen to him all the time. Don't not so much anymore, but it's just like, and a lot of people say it's just, people think it's less risky to be in a 9-to-5 job, but sometimes it's the most risky thing because you don't control what can happen to you. And so, yeah, I would say that. Look, it's not for everybody. It is easier now than ever to be an entrepreneur and try something quick and fail. It's easier now than ever to do it while you're working at a job. You can vibe code something on a site like Lovable and build a site in hours, in minutes, that would take weeks or longer. And then you can use that prototype to help figure out if there's use case. And this doesn't have to be just a prototype. It can be a working website that can help sort of test out a product. With that said, there's more and more people than ever doing that kind of thing. So there's always a give and take with competition, what you're trying to do. And so, yeah, I think even if you work for a company, it's that, you know, intrapreneur mindset, which is the only two things it's the stoicism mindset of the only two things you can control is how you think and how you feel. And then also having keeping your commitments, taking 100% responsibility for your actions, all these things that help you regardless of where you are, whether it's your business, whether you're volunteering somewhere, or if you're working at a company.
That's a great quote, by the way. I didn't know you were like kind of a fellow stoic, but yes, the only thing you can control is how you think and how you feel. Is that what you just said? It's a great quote. Tell me a little bit about the fast forward mindset. What are you talking about in this book?
The fast forward mindset was written in 2019, and it was based on three sources. One was probably dozens, if not 30 to 40 entrepreneur business books that I'd read over the years, and distilling the major points from each one of those books and the learnings and all the studies that they use. The second was my experience in building Lawline from 0 to 5 million and all the leadership challenges and fails that I had through that time. And the third was about 10 years of journals that I had about where I had done things, where I wanted to be more, where I had challenges and walls and I couldn't get through them. So I was trying to build a framework on how I could be. And I realized the two things when I couldn't get through it, I was not fearless enough and not focused enough. And so with all these sources, I wanted to build a framework for myself and others how to be more fearless and focused over the next 20 plus years of their life. And what I saw, what was different about the fast forward mindset than other books, many books taught you how to get out of the comfort zone. You know, like it's all about how to get out of the comfort zone, but very few showed you how to stay out of the comfort zone longer once you're there. And so that's what the fast forward mindset was about, is not only taking the action to get out, but how to not fall back in and stay focused to stay out longer to accelerate your success.
So how to sustain all of this? And one thing that I'd like to kind of like highlight is, because I ask the people that I talk to, what are your lives like outside of work? Because, you know, when you're trying to determine what career to go into, a lot of people are just thinking about, okay, well, that seems to match my aptitudes and skills. But they don't think about, like, am I going to be able to pursue the things I'd love to? Am I going to be able to cook and do the things I want to do or travel? Can you tell me a little bit about that? Are you, and this is kind of leading you to in a certain direction, but can you talk a little bit about how your life is enabled or not enabled by being an entrepreneur?
Yeah, and I think I know the direction you're leading. But so the book, The Fast Forward Mindset, was like, okay, let me put my money where my mouth is. So after we published it, using the framework that's our, that I we put together, I said, okay, what can we do? My entire life, I either lived in college next to my parents or five blocks from my childhood home. I'm like, what can I do to get out of my comfort zone there and give my kids the biggest, a great life experience? So we decided to look and decide to move to Barcelona with our family. And we moved there in 2019 just for that experience, to get our kids away from their childhood home and see what life was outside the US. And little did we know, we ended up moving there 7 months before COVID, and we ended up getting stuck in the strictest lockdown in Europe, where the kids were not allowed to leave that apartment for 52 days straight. And so that was, of course, part of the experience and the journey as well. But what we were able to do was rebuild the operating system of our family. Before that, we had three kids under six. We never traveled.
Right.
We built a rallying cry that we wanted to live our life through travel, because that was important to me and my wife. We thought that meant maybe family vacations. But I told enough people about it that one person I told, they said, well, you should talk to this guy, David Rich. He just moved his family to Barcelona for the year. And you want to live your life through travel? Like, that's what you should do. So I spoke to him 4 years back and forth for 4 years before we can actually make the move. And so then we did that, and we ended up, because of COVID, not staying 1 year, but we stayed 2 years. And now ever since, we look and we do big trips, lifetime trips. We went to Japan, we went to Israel, we're going to Patagonia, we went to New Zealand and Australia, all since we came back from Barcelona, because our kids are now the family of, like, okay, what can we do next? What can we explore? And I think the kid who says, what can we do next? Where can we explore? Is also the kid who's less afraid, or the adult who's less afraid to try new things and explore new things in their life.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I lived in Seville for a year, and I lived in Chile, so I have an affinity for Spain. And I remember when you went over there, you guys were locked down way before we were. And I remember watching you and your reports from Barcelona, and people like knocking on pans at night. And there was some beauty in there within all of that, like, lockdown stuff that you hit.
You know, we knew it was come, like, it happens like that, right? Like, it's just like, first they said schools are going to be 2 weeks out. Then they said, okay, we're doing a lockdown for 2 weeks, but it ended up getting extended six times. And because we didn't have news, we didn't have a TV, we just had, you know, Netflix and all that, we didn't actually know what was going on. And one night we were just like sitting in our apartment, we hear all this noise outside, because nobody told us. We're like, what the hell is going on? We go outside and we hear everyone banging, and it grew every night. By the third night, it was still dark out because it was before daylight saving. There were so many people outside banging and screaming. Not only were we clapping for each other, but it's of course for all the first responders and everyone else out there. I just started bawling. Like, just the emotion of it all. Like, I'm in Barcelona in a lockdown. What the hell is going on? And everyone just on their balcony clapping. And I just couldn't believe what it was. And then after a couple of weeks, they started singing this song, and it's actually on YouTube now. And it was such a beautiful song, and I didn't even know what the words meant. And what the words, after I translated it, means, you know, we're at our windows, we're after the lockdown, we're going to have a toast together and celebrate. And so, like, it just became our ritual, 8 o'clock every night, that this is what we would do during lockdown. And our kids, my kids would get their pots and pans, and they would get into it. And it was like, and I had neighbors. So it was really special. And I know, I think it eventually picked up in the United States, but I don't know if it was ever like that was for us. It was a reprieve. It was a safety net that we had.
Yeah, it didn't catch on in Boca Raton, Florida. So this is another plug for entrepreneurship. You are not spending 2 years in a foreign country. You are not going to like spending the time required to visit Japan or New Zealand if you're not an entrepreneur and completely in control of your own destiny. I mean, there's other ways you can do it, but...
With that said, there were several people there. There was even lawyers there. This is before COVID even, who figured out opportunities that they were able to work remotely.
Digital nomad types.
The digital nomad. And now, of course, post-COVID and remote work, you do not need to be an entrepreneur to live somewhere distant. It is so acceptable for many companies. Look, some companies you can't, but it's not like it used to be where you had to be. But yes, of course, travel and other things like that. With that said, because I like to practice what I preach, we have a very generous vacation policy at Lawline. We celebrate people traveling and exploring new places. We built Lawline to be a culture that you want to be at for your career. And so we have a rotating four and a half day work week. So every other Friday, half the company has off. We have fringe benefits where people get, you know, money every week that goes to being able to buy things, either gift cards or gym classes. We do matching 401k. We do other profit share. We do a lot of things that small businesses wouldn't necessarily do. And we really focus on, you know, work-life balance. That's important to us because I always wanted to create that culture where you can be your true self at work. And that's what is important to me, because my message to everyone in the company is not like, the only way you could be happy is if you're an entrepreneur, because it's not forever. And that's where personality testing really comes into play. We just worked with one of my friends who I actually met in Barcelona. He has a company called Type Coach. It's a much easier, better way to do the Myers-Briggs test. And you realize there are certain personality types that like want focus and order and structure. And for sure for them, like the chaos of running a business and figuring things out on the fly would not be for them. So I've matured as I've got more gray hairs and just realizing there's different things for different folks.
Yeah, for sure. Well, we had a kid working for us who was in sales and he was great. He was an excellent salesman. And he decides to leave to start his own business. And I knew that he was in recovery, like a Narcotics Anonymous, or he went through a program. And, you know, I know, having gone through the ups and downs of entrepreneurship, some days you get your best customer, other days you lose your best customer. And, you know, you have these headaches that you're talking about, the major headaches that you're talking about. And I was like, are you sure you really want to do that? And it turned out to really not go well for him, to say the least.
Yeah.
But I don't want to bring the whole podcast down. But yes, the other thing I want to say is that, like, you know, when people are hearing that, you know, you had these issues with your COOs and that you've written books and that you've built this company, that it really does start small. Like, you land your first customer, then you land five customers, then you land 10 and 25. And it's like, it, when you hear stories from people like us, it doesn't all happen at once. It happens over time. So, and we all
started 20 years.
Yeah. Yeah. So, what are those? There's like a 20-year overnight success. There's some sort of expression.
Well, one of my favorite expressions is you underestimate what you can accomplish in 1 year and over. Now you overestimate what you can accomplish in 1 year and underestimate what you can accomplish in a decade.
I love that one. That's a Bill Gatesism, I think.
Yeah, probably.
Yeah. Well, he's so smart. The way you run your company is awesome. I think to be an employee from Lawline would be amazing. For those of you that are out there and you're thinking about jobs and you're thinking about your future, one thing you may want to consider is the CEO like David Schnurman. Is he thinking about the culture that he wants to build, or is it just a company that's run by spreadsheet? Now, if somebody was going to work at your company, for example, like, what do you look for? Like, are you hiring? Kids might want to know that. Do you use, like, what's the hiring process like at Lawline?
We have a very... I'm proud to say a very thorough and structured hiring process. We use top grading structure where you have a scorecard for every role. And we do behavioral interviews as well, where you ask questions about their past role and you ask specific questions like what and why did you do certain roles? And you start back all the way. We have different people ask different parts of those interviews. So these behavioral questions are like, what did you do in this role? Why did you do it? Tell me more. And like, and so you, you do that through every role that they've had in their career, and you really get to paint a picture. And when you ask why three or four times, usually the first or second answer, you know, is the prepared one. Sure. By the third or fourth, they can't, they're like, okay, I hated my job or whatever it is. those interview processes weed out a lot of people because of the thoroughness, because of how we do it. Then we do group interviews with members of the team, and each person on that group interview has a structured set list of questions or theme of questions that they're responsible for. Then they do an interview with the director one-on-one of the function. And then finally, the last person they interview with is me. And everyone at that point has already agreed at that point, but it has to be the right fit for me. I don't think 99% of the time it is, right, in those situations. But we're still small enough where, as a CEO of the company, I should know everyone ahead of time. And it gives them a chance to interview me. I think a candidate is interviewing us as much as we're interviewing them if they're good, because they have a lot of opportunities. And then, yeah, I mean, one of the things that when we did this personality testing, it was actually kind of cool. We saw the average personality type of the company was the exact opposite of me, which he said, congratulations, because I'm an ENTP, which is an entrepreneur with a short attention span, who has a lot of ideas, who's very creative and just can go all over the place. That's how the company was probably the first 7 years or 5 years. And we were just it did stuff, but as you grow and grow and get more people, that just, you can't run a business that way. And so we've built a very stable, structured business with a strong foundation that is steadily supports our customers, supports our employees, and continues to grow. Where we need potentially, as we look to what's happening now with AI being so transformative to every industry, we need to put on the risk taker hat again and say, okay, where are we going to bet big? And we're doing that. We're building new products and we're trying different things. And I have to myself too, and figure that out, because, you know, it's easy to get comfortable, as you know, in the good life.
For sure. David, you're a busy guy. I'm going to let you go. Thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah. So folks, if you enjoyed this podcast, please give us a good rating. We hope to see you again. And if you can, be grateful for something today.
Love it. Thank you.